Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of That's Not Quite All, Folks, the Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
You're doing this big, like, proud. We proudly present this new episode that we've worked so desperately on. I'm Jordan Schmidt.
This is an episode that I like to call, Whose Idea Was This Anyway?
Oh, I love that show!
Yeah, no, it's great. Where you have... This was something that... Mark, you read about something, said that would be a good idea for an episode, realized it was only two shorts and went, you know, it's still worth doing an episode about it. And
and even then, as we're recording this, I have to go, wait a minute, hold on, we can do better.
Can we though?
No. All right, so the theme of this week's episode is Bing Crosby.
The kids are clamoring for it.
Yes, I like our demographics.
We want the Bing Crosby episode, or else we'll scale the tops of your houses and skin you alive, and and we have to just shove at these people with sticks. Back, you animals. Maybe we'll think about doing the Bing Crosby episode someday.
So, the shorts we are covering today are Let It Be Me, Bingo Crosbyana, and Catch As Cats Can.
Fucking exhilarating. Now, you know, as Mark even says, one of these was supposed to be completely different, and then it turns out the one we were going to do was barely even a Bing connection.
And so barely. So we were going to cover a Babbitt and Costello short. Did I say it wrong?
No. I'm glaring at you because that would have been even worse than the two we actually did.
Yeah.
Do.
And I don't even remember why I put it there.
Yeah.
And I just looked it up. I just looked it up. It's like, yeah, he hypnotizes Costello to do like impressions, and one of the impressions is Bing Crosby. And I looked at that and went, wait, so it's just a gag?
Uh huh.
Shit, I wouldn't want to do that. So instead, we picked a better, I think, cartoon with Cats as Cats Can. So those are three we're covering today.
Yeah.
And before we get into it, right into your first short, Jordan, there is context behind this episode. We didn't just do a Bing Crosby episode for the kicks.
No. So Bing Crosby ended up suing Warner Brothers because of two of the shorts that we're going to be talking about today. And because Bing Crosby, for those of you who know, Bing Crosby was hot shit in the 30s. He was this big star. He was topping all the music charts. And then he was in the movies and he won Oscars. And he was just this amazing singing and acting sensation. And so obviously there were these copycat types. And there was these cartoons and things that would cash in on Bing's star. And these two were the basis of a lawsuit from Bing Crosby, basically saying, you're using my likeness and you are using my likeness incorrectly. And these two are incorrect uses of the Bing Crosby name and legacy. And so he took Warner Brothers to court over this. And I don't think the case actually went anywhere. I mean, they argued for a bit. I don't think there was any actual, like, big comeuppance for anybody, but you know, I don't think the judge found anything, unless I'm really mistaken. But
it didn't go anywhere. If it did go somewhere, Bing probably didn't win because that's stupid.
He probably said, "Well, I can't do a Bing Crosby impression, so this is going to be a really difficult episode for me to do."
But he said, that's okay. Neither can two of these shorts, honestly.
Not everyone's Richard Bickenbeck.
No.
But, yeah, no. So, there was a litigation. There was attempted lawsuits. Didn't really go anywhere because, for reasons we'll get into in these.
So the first show we're covering here is Let It Be Me. It came out on May 2nd, 1936. Regards what happened on that day.
Sergei Prokofiev. Composition Peter and the Wolf premieres in Moscow. Very nice.
Yeah. Peter and the Wolf, very infamous musical piece. So we'll later get adapted into a classic Walt Disney animated short. So that's nice.
The suite itself is pretty good. I played that in concert band in high school. And I'll tell you this. This was one of the ones where... Because Peter and the Wolf, for those of you unfamiliar with that suite, it involves a narrator that basically is like, you know, one day, Peter went into the woods. It's like, then a fox came out. You know, so things like that. And so Symphonic Band, we needed a narrator, and we were going to get an English teacher of ours to do it. And in the interim, in order to fill in, we had, I don't know if you remember him, Mark, our friend Tyler. Oh.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, Tyler, who lives right near me, just as tall as me as well. Yeah, really good guy. And so he has this deep voice and deep voice and comedic timing. And so he was on trombone, and so he'd run in and do the Wolf by Sergei Prokofiev, and he was pretty good, But we played that. It's a very good piece. You know, there's lots of very good pieces of it that have been, you know, they're very famous to this day. Yeah.
And also born on this day was the musical artist Engelbert Humperdinck.
You're kidding me.
I'm not.
Oh my god. Engelbert. You know why I'm laughing, right?
Because the last name's ridiculous. I get it. But
You ever seen the Eddie Izzard bit on Engelbert Humperdinck?
I don't believe I have.
Oh my god.
And Engelbert Humperdinck, yes, he was a man. That's not his real name. He's from Britain, but that's not his name. There's very few Humperdincks in Britain. He was born Jerry Dorsey. And not Engelbert Humperdinck. His parents were not Mr. and Mrs. Humperdinck. They never said, what should we call our son so he does not get the shit kicked out of him at school? We shall call him Engelbert. Good, that'll work. Now, his name was Jerry Dorsey, and he released songs as Jerry Dorsey, songs such as, oh, of Cho, which didn't work because no one could hear what he was saying. And then his managers obviously said, we're going to change your name, Jerry. It's the name that's the problem. And his name changed from Jerry Dorsey to Engelbert Humperdinck. I mean, I just wanted to be in the room when they were working that one through. Zingelbert Bembledack. Yingibert Dangleban. Zangelbert Bingledack. Wingelbert Humptyback. Slut Bunwala. What? All right, Kringlebert Fisty Buns. Stevie Buns Buttrundles. No, Jerry Dorsey. I like Jerry Dorsey. No, we can't. What have we got? Zingelbert Bembledack, Tringlebert Wangledack, Slop Bumwalla, Klingy Bun Fistle Bars, Dindlebert Zendeldack, Jerry Dorsey, Engelbert Humptyback, Zingelbert Bengledack, Engelbert Humperdinck, Vingelbert Wingledank. No, go back one. Go back one. That's it. And it worked.
He did the song After the Lovin', which is a song my dad really likes. So there.
He wrote songs your dad likes, but he also wrote songs that my grandmother really liked. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Brings the people together, his music.
Brings the people together, yeah. Engelbert. And also, the William Goldman would famously use his last name as the villain in Princess Bride. You know, Prince Humperdinck.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's based nice. On Engelbert.
All right, this short was directed by Friz Freleng, written with story by J. Bugs Hardaway.
Yes, Ben Hardaway.
So what this short is, what it revolves around, is it's a world full of chickens. They're all chickens, they're all birds, and there's this new sensation.
Mel Gibson. No, that's a different movie. That's different entirely. Sorry.
That's different movie altogether. Called, I think, is he just Bing?
Bingo.
Bingo.
It's Bingo. Yes. That was his
That's
name.
That's their legally binding name. So that they wouldn't get sued, I guess.
Well, tough. Oh, no. They did anyway.
So we open with this, you know, this montage of Bing singing his song. The women are smitten. One moment that I did like was it's this woman in her house.
I like that.
On the nasty, pulls up a photo of Bing. She loves it so much. And the husband comes in, looks at the photo, stomps on it. And I think he leaves her.
I think so, too. Yeah, I liked that. It was the one light spot in that montage.
He's broken a marriage.
Ariana! Oh, how many weeks in a row am I going to bring her up?
I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
Yes. So, Bingo eventually leaves the radio station. All the women are like, oh my god, Bingo, I love you. And then we get a 30-second montage of Bingo walking.
Yeah. I literally put in my notes, why do we have 10 seconds of Bing walking while looking at us? Did they want to really just pad out the runtime?
I still like to believe that in the 30s era of animation, it was very much still, look at this! Look what we can do!
We can make him walk! Just wait, next he's gonna sit down!
Yes! Yes! He's walking, doing something.
And it's very overlong, and there's even moments where you can see the animation begin to repeat before they cut. So, like, it's very repetitive, but it's, you know, it does get us to basically our story, which is, you know, the story of two chickens in love whose relationship is splintered by the arrival of one cuckolding celebrity asshole. Gee, I wonder why he sued.
I will say, because, you know, they're... It's Emily, and it says here in the Wikipedia article, it's like a predecessor to Prissy. I don't think so.
Pretty. A little. I can see it a little bit.
Make this short canon in the Prissy timeline. This is Prissy in her younger age. No.
At no point in this cartoon does Emily go, yes!
No, she says no at one point, which we'll get to.
Yes.
So... her boyfriend is about to propose like flowers to her, and he sounds very goofy. As they're sitting in the house, just listening to the radio, I believe.
Yeah.
And then a car speeds by, and it's Bingo. And I gotta admit, I like the joke where he honks the horn, and all four of his horn notes are just Bing Crosby sounds. They got a lot of mileage out of Bing Crosby noises, but I gotta admit, it was fun. I like that.
Yeah, it was alright. they're trying to establish this sort of new love story between Emily and Bingo, but like it also includes this overlong clip of Bingo looking her up and down.
Oh yeah. Oh, and he's into it. She's not drawn sexy. No. But you can tell that they're like, put some curves to her, you know, to make her look a little appealing to Bingo, I guess.
Look, if this was a Tex Avery cartoon, it would be a sexy chicken.
Yes. Yes, but it's not. It's not. This is Freeling. This is 1930s Freeling. He didn't know what sexy was. You see, he's a small town boy. Anyways, but yeah, but this is where, you know, I'm done here. I'm like, okay, this cartoon's all right. I don't see what the big deal is. Cut to 30-second sequence of Bing Crosby chicken looking up a chicken that's drawn very detailed. As he just picks up this girl in his car and drives away.
And gets her drunk.
Against her will. They go to a party and he's like, eh? She's like, no. He does a couple of boo 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 boo, some Bing Crosby sounds, and immediately she's like, yeah, okay, which so this short saying that Bing Crosby uses his power of celebrity to get women to indulge in drinks. Are we sure this is the Bing Crosby story and not the Bill Cosby story?
They're so close. They're so close.
Both in name and situation.
It's not like this would be improved if the Bingo character were Cosby, though. Like if he just honks the horn and goes, "Sabop and boop boop." Would you like to go down to the city with me? Here, drink a little.
So, she's having a good time, and then a performer comes up on the stage, and she's from Paris. She's singing this song, and Bing's like, "Hey, come over here. I want some of that." Ash. She goes over to him. And she's flirting with Bing. And we get... this killed me because, you know, it's 1930s. What do you think 1930s? You think, like, fun chipper animation? But no, in this cartoon, we have a moment of the Bing Crosby bird essentially telling Emily to fuck off.
Yeah.
With his body language. He's like, yeah, whatever. Go away. As she's upset. And he calls security, and she gets thrown out. So, what this short is saying is, Bing Crosby picks up random chicks and, wines and dines them and then leaves them out to dry out on the streets.
No wonder he sued.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't do that. I usually, I ask them for another date, and then they say no. I say, that's all right with me. It's not getting any better.
That's not. So, she gets her on the streets. I'm thinking, okay, she'll go back to her boyfriend, and that works out. No! She is now on the street!
Yeah!
Like,
what happened there? What?
Like, I guess she was living with him. I guess when she went out with Bing, I guess that terminated the lease, I guess. I don't fucking know. But, but yeah, she's on the streets trying to sell violets in the snow. It's very sad.
Yeah.
And, we come back to the boyfriend, who's back in the house, listening to the radio. And, I think I know why they chose the song of Let It Be Me. That's the song that's from the catalog they use in this, where the first line is, when someone steals your heart away, let it be me.
Oh, which, it will be.
Yeah, exactly. So the boyfriend, first he's mad at the radio. So he beats up the radio, and the radio dies with Bing Crosby noises.
I liked that. It was fun.
That was fun. That was
fun. It's sounding like other things.
Yeah. As the boyfriend storms down to the radio station with, frankly, an unnecessary, like, a thought bubble comes up of him strangling Bing, which we didn't need that.
We didn't need that. We kind of knew that was what he wanted.
Yeah, I kind of like this. As we cut back to the radio station, Bing is singing that song again. I'm pretty sure it's reused animation, but whatever.
Yeah.
As he goes into the station, she's like,
we don't even see it. We just hear the commotion from outside the radio station, which I think is funnier.
So the boyfriend has killed Bing Crosby as all the children screamed.
Hey, I don't like that.
As the boyfriend walks these city streets and he runs into Emily and they're like, "Ah, I missed you. I didn't know you were here." Which, a fine story.
They weren't really focusing on character. They were really focusing on
No,
the
it's
story.
like Lady Love the guy. Don't know where he lives. Anyways. So they're back together. They hug as we go on to our epilogue or happy ending. They got together. They have a bunch of chicks. And okay, I know what joke they were going for here, where one of the baby chicks is looking at the piano sheet music, starts doing some Bing Crosby, boop, 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 as the father just throws a book at him. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's like, you know, oh, how funny. The kid's learning music. It sounds like Bing Crosby. That's funny. But it's also just that sick part of me that's like, did we miss a reel? Did he do something?
Well, you know. Sometimes you gotta throw a coin in the fountain and see if it develops.
What's the 1930s version of Maury?
Well, Mac, you certainly have been away around the bush. But we're gonna have this polygraph test, which takes about 3 years to develop.
Well, that's right, alright, yeah.
It says here, Bing, that you... Alright, it's taking a couple more seconds to develop it. So while you're here, maybe sing something.
Well, okay, I guess I'll do that.
Okay, here it is. You are the father.
Oh, I swear to God, I'm not.
Bully! 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 What?
I guess you know.
I've realized what my Bing Crosby impression has turned into, and it's a reference that maybe only Mark will get.
What?
It's the one Conan character. Like, say, you got a real hot Irish temper. I wrote a song about the Irish.
Yes, that guy. The sea swinger.
Oh, Irish people aren't allowed to breed.
There's no sense of context. Anyways, so.
And Mark will be making a really tough decision later if whether or not that goes into the episode.
On one hand, it's a funny Conan O'Brien reference. But on the other. No, fuck it. It's Conan O'Brien reference. Of course it goes in.
Say, you got a hot Irish temper. I wrote a little song about the Irish. Listen up. Oh, the Irish shouldn't be allowed to breathe. We already have more drunkards than we need. They're all just lazy slobs who want to take away our jobs. And when they cut their fingers, whiskey's all they bleed. Whiskey-dee-woo.
No, wait a minute. You said whiskey-dee-woo. That's ridiculous.
Oh, boy. So, yeah. That's where it ends. That's where we come to our conclusion.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can see why Bing would not be okay with this short. He's depicted as a man who breaks relationships, breaks homes, steals girls, wines and dines them, then ditches them.
Ariana Grande. No, sorry, I've already done that joke.
I think any person, I don't know who you are, if they, you know, they're sitting at the theater with their family, or they're taking the nice afternoon stroll to the cinema, They sit down, they look at that and go, "Huh, is Bing Crosby like that? I haven't read the paper lately.
I've been buying them all. Extra read all about it. I got my own news now. The front page news says Bing's the greatest. I sure am."
Next up on Bing News is Frank Sinatra, commie. We'll tell you all about it here on the,
Signs point to yes.
This is the worst impression I've ever done, and that says something.
Yes. So, yeah, I get it. The short is not that bad as a cartoon, though. There's some decent gags in here. The story goes by a decent pace. The character work just sucks. That's all, really. The best character in this is Bing Crosby, unfortunately.
But even then, it's just like, well, what is this? Like, it's there's not really much of a hook other than, hey, look, it's Bing Crosby. It's
exactly.
You know, like, what else can you? Yes, what else? Like, you know, you got to have more than just that. Like, at least something like Swooner Crooner has, okay, here's Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, but it's this other thing about, you know, the assembly line of chickens, and it's about motivation, and it's so much differently. It's here, it's just like, okay, Bing Crosby is here. And that's it. I will say, surprisingly well-handled story and escalation, great ending. I did like just this culminating in the guy beating the shit out of Bing. I liked that. The storytelling pieces were intact, but as a comedy short, this isn't great. And they'd figure it out as they went along what to do in terms of gag pacing. But yeah, as you said, Mark, this is not the worst. It's just not great.
Yeah, I give this short a 3 out of 5.
I'm giving it a 2.5 out of 5. But
that's fine.
You know. So the next one we have is... Bingo Crosbyana, which, if you think that one was a hey, look, it's Bing Crosby kind of deal, this one is too. So this one came out on May 30th, 1936. A couple of very cool on this days. Margaret Mitchell's novel Gone with the Wind is first published. It'd be on the screen literally 3 years later. So.
Quick turnaround time, goddamn.
Yeah, hey, yeah, no, of course. Speaking of quick turnaround times for adaptations, born on this day was the actor Keir Dulea, who played Dave Bowman in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Ah, huh. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
2001 A Space Odyssey, it's overrated.
It is.
Yeah, no.
I saw that in my, I saw the film in my high school film appreciation course.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I always said, oh, is it because we split up the movie into, like, 4 classes because it's a long-ass movie? Yeah. Nah, even we were all sitting there, it was just... Yeah. When we got to hell... When do we get to
pretty
hell?
Pretty much, yeah. I like it for what it was, but there are much better Kubrick films. Because I took a whole course on Kubrick in college. And, I mean, getting to see stuff like Paths of Glory and Doctor Strangelove and The Shining, obviously. Like, yeah, he's made much better movies, in my opinion. But it's all right. Now... Now, the site that we use to get... to get on this day stuff, you know, usually, I mean, you can tell that a lot is either like you like set up by users or set up by like, you know, it's not like well curated. Like there's some things it's like, okay, that's incorrect. Or like, you know, it's very much almost AI generated at times. And I mean, it usually gives us a lot of thorough bullet points, you know, very specific things we can take and use in episodes. And there was one bullet point that said, that on May 30th, 1936, that the following happened.
Okay.
June.
Oh, June happened.
Now,
oh,
now it just says June. That can't be true, can it? That on May 30th, 1936, June happened? I saw this and I'm like, what in blazes?
I'm going to cross out my resources here. It says here June started on June 1st, 1936.
You see, that makes sense.
And in fact, there's a 31st day in the month of May. So, no, it wasn't June.
But somebody at this site that we use for On This Day stuff went, you know, there's a chance that it could have been June on that day.
No. No, it was not.
And this is not the first error I've seen on this site. There are times where they've gotten birthdays and death days confused, and that sometimes it said, you know, also died on this day, someone who is still alive. And I'm like, so, okay, you're not predicting the future. Absolutely not. Go away. Or there's also been times where it's given a birthday and you look it up and it's actually 2 days later or a year earlier. And so it's like,
okay. Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
So,
but,
like,
I use the On This Day. There's an On This Day website.
That one's a little bit more concise.
Either that or Wikipedia, which, because they have a whole thing on Wikipedia, we can like look up days of in the past, and that's pretty reliable.
Yeah. Okay. Bingo.
Yeah, like,
yes.
Well, I found one for that day, which is that the Indianapolis 500 occurred.
Okay.
Lewis Mayer became the first three-time winner of the race. And the famous tradition of serving milk in the victory lane commences.
Okay. Great.
Because can you imagine if they still did that today? Go to a NASCAR racing event. Like, okay, cold milk. Get your cold milk. Oh, take three. Here you go. Thank you. Takes our flask, opens it, pours into the milk. Ah, better.
Yeah, because if you think NASCAR races, NASCAR viewing public, you think, hey, guys, let's get another round of milk. Now, I know they're not having Bud Light, but they're definitely not having milk.
Now, that also sounds like something a cartoon show would do. You know, like characters go to a racing event or a bar or something. They're like, oh, everything's so crazy. What are they serving here? Milk. Oh.
Oh, my mistake. We're right across the street from the bar that sells Tang and only Tang. Which is also right down the street from the prison. Whoever laid out this town clearly didn't know what they were talking about.
No, they didn't. Okay. So, bingo, Crosby, Anna.
Oh, yeah, right. Friz Freleng directed it. J.B. Hardaway wrote it.
Do they have an axe to grind?
Maybe. Maybe Ben and Friz going, let's fuck him up. Billy Pletcher is the only credited voice actor. The title song was composed by Sanford Green with lyrics by Irving Cahill. It's another short that Bing sued over. I'll explain why when we get to the point where he sued over it. It's, if you like the first one, it's more of that. Only instead of chickens, it's flies.
Oh, no, it's way more pathetic. Way more pathetic.
Yep. So I will say, the opening sequence where it's flies eating large food in creative ways is pretty clever. You know, they're draining an orange with spaghetti straws, then lading the tramp a plate of noodles. I will say, this kitchen is very noodle-based, which begs the question, I mean, who owns the kitchen? The guy from, the Italian guy from the Charlie Dog short?
Noodles are just easier to animate, maybe?
Probably. But yeah, you get like little gags here where it's flies playing with food, and they're interesting things. I also like the one where it's two flies playing William Tell with peas, and you know, one thinks, oh, I'm going to shoot the other one in the head. All right, here's a compromise. Let's bring over a pumpkin instead, and he still gets shot. I like that. And then after the really good opening gags, it very quickly becomes a set-to-music cartoon as well, where we introduce this forthcoming gay caballero visitor to this town named Bingo Crosby Anna, who is a Cuban caballero type who comes to town. Now, if anything, if I'm Bing Crosby, I would look at this and I'd go, hey, wait a second, I'm not Cuban. I'm American. You know, US of A.
And, listen, not saying that it would be better if this Cuban character looked more like Bing Crosby, but this character doesn't look like Bing Crosby.
No, he looks like a fly for some reason.
It's a random ass fly. He says boo 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 once, and like he kind of sounds like Bing Crosby in the song, but not really.
Yeah, I don't understand. Why would it have my name if it was a fly? I'm not a fly.
It's a worse Bing Crosby impression than the one you're doing now, Jorn. I'll put it that
way. Really? Wow.
Oh, well, yeah, because if you took his name and called him anything else, would it really change the character that much?
I'm going to call him Gaylord.
Yes.
So Gaylord arrives in town, and again, there's this whole thing where there's this Cuban caballero thing. The other flies are singing this song as some of the other flies use different household objects to use as instruments. I like that. But this song, who we got actual songwriters to write, there's a line in there where it's basically a song about how great and how debonair and suave Bingo Crosby Anna is. And there's a line in there that says, he is the sheik that murders the weaker gender.
Bingo Crosby Anna, the crooning hero of Havana. You'll find his photograph on his friend Vienna. Don't you know that he's the peanut vendor that made the tourist they surrender? He is the sheik that murders the weaker gender.
And I bet the Incan painters just sort of shrugged at that. Yeah, they hate women, sure, whatever.
Fucking sexist paint! Anyways, I'm gonna continue painting this
Wonderful, give Gaylord a nice little hat there. but yeah, so it becomes very much a, hey, everybody, I'm Bingo Crosby Anna. I do all these things. Watch as I do some flying out of it. It's nowhere near it. It's not even the ballpark.
I fuck pussy all the damn time.
I like the sound of that.
I will say that, because yeah, he does this demonstration, like he can fly really well, almost like a plane, and then he lands back down, and I just wrote down here, can!
What?
Toy Story reference.
Oh, right, yeah. I thought you were going to say that's not flying, that's falling with style.
Yeah, but my line fit with the scene I was referencing. Anyways,
for sure. So it's lots of this, and he's there are some cool things where he flies around. You know, there's a nice shot of him going in and out of a wheel of cheese, and there are some cool things there. But it's mostly just like, hey, look how cool I am! Oh my God, he's so cool! Yeah, and then of course all the husbands and all the men that the guy flies get jealous. And so they try and figure out a way of getting rid of him. And that's around the same time as a spider shows up. And here's the bit that Bing objected to. Because the spider shows up, and Gaylord immediately turns yellow. Like, literally turns yellow and tries to run away as much as he can. And, like, Bing in the suit was like, hey, I'm no vainglorious coward. You know, I don't go around and run away from my problems. I fight them, but not in the abusive way. That's for sure. But yeah, so the whole thing is that, like, he doesn't like that he's being portrayed as someone who's like running away from the battle, which I don't think he ever served. So
but also, Bing, dude, who cares?
I do.
Oh no, I don't want to be demonstrated as a cowardly person. Motherfucker, did you see the last short? That one's way worse. Way worse. No rational American's gonna watch this short and go, yeah, Bing Crosby's a fucking coward. Well, I guess I just won't listen to his music anymore because he's a fucking coward. Oh no, Bing Crosby. If you put Bing Crosby next to a spider, he's gonna run away like a little sissy. No!
Hey, I'm no coward. I won an Oscar for playing a priest. Do with that what you will.
Sure!
But yeah, the whole thing is that he's running away, and then I think it's the who ends up saving the day. Is it the other guys that begin to
the guy like, flies?
Yeah, the so guy is taking the giant drill,
all the
right?
The female flies. So yeah. all the women go into this little thing of wax paper, which I found funny. I'm like, ha, they're all into wax paper. It's funny because that kills flies or whatever. Yeah. As the spider goes in there. And all the guys get this mechanism to work as they shove it onto the spider's ass, which I wrote down here. Oh no! They learn that he likes it.
Drilling a spider's ass, eh?
Yeah, we made that up.
It's my favorite Cinema Snob episode. The drilling of the spider's ass. Anyways,
why? That's not even. I can't even. Yeah, my Brad Jones is worse than my Bing Crosby, if you can believe it.
Terrible. So anyway,
there's more of that, and you know they get rid of the spider, and you know I think he lands in the flypaper. I think right.
Yeah. Yep.
And so the day is saved, and the ending is. I mean, again, like, first of all, the ending section with the flies striking back at the spider is a ton better than the rest of this cartoon. And it allows for subversive and quick animation, great ideas, and lots of really cool stuff where they're actually trying to stand a chance against him. And I just wish it didn't have to grind to a halt for all the Crosby stuff. You know, there's some good stuff in the back of it. But yeah, you know, everybody wins and they get Bing Crosby out of the little hole in the twine that he was in. And the ending of this is Bing taking credit for the whole thing and promptly being trounced by the other guys. So, in response, Bing tried to take credit for the whole thing. And he said it's not like him.
Bing, buddy, get a life. Get an afterlife. Please.
I got nothing else to do but watch the cartoons with me.
Did he have nothing to do that day? Seriously, do you think he, Sinatra, like the Rat Pack, when they're filming one of their movies, they're just sitting around where everything's to be set up, and Bing's like, hey, you guys see that Warner Brothers cartoon where they had me as a fly? Just Frank going... Yeah. That was stupid. It was stupid, Bing. Yeah, I guess, but like it was disturbing toward my character, right? No. Bang. It was stupid. But what you did was stupider.
They did me a million times. I didn't care. They did 20 Frank Sinatra cartoons. What am I going to do?
They were friends with Don Wrinkles. Come on!
So, Bingo Crosby. I hate every time I have to say the fucking title then. Gaylord McSniffle-Pants. Similar to the other one, but with an even duller story and even sharper ending, subversion. The Bing stuff didn't work. The other really cool stuff suffered from it. It's even worse of a Bing parody than the first one because it's only nominally Bing. There's not much at all to say about this one, although it does, you can see Freeling's mentalities begin to spring into place, but too late and too early. It's just smothered by a wall of uninteresting Bing Crosby pastiche, and it just sinks the whole thing.
Yeah. Again, just like the cowardly thing is such a weak thing to get pissed or off over. Like, the Bing Crosby impression isn't even that good, and you can say he's anyone else, and it would still run the same. Honestly, if I would probably sue WB for not going harder with the Bing satire, which, again, you look at the previous short, that's worth suing over, because actually there was some bite to it, as opposed to this one, it was just, hey, he's a bitch, I don't know. I gotta ask you, man. I've seen more buying satire in Hollywood Steps Out than I have in this cartoon. You know?
Yeah, not ideal.
And you know which Hollywood movie star sued WB? None of them! Because they have better shit to do than try to sue a cartoon studio!
Bing did.
Oh my god.
2 out of 5. Do not like.
Yeah, agreed. 2 out of 5. The animation was really good. Fine direction. Everything else is just stupid.
Yeah.
This is stupid. This is so fucking stupid. God damn it, being a fucking moron. All right. So our last short here is the Hail Mary pass of this episode.
Yes.
This is Catch As Cats Can. It came out on December 6th, 1947. The gods are having on that day. This is really, really big news. The University of Cambridge University voted to accept women for the first time.
Yeah.
Progress.
After the last couple shorts had put back women by several years. The most ironic thing about this day in history is that White Christmas by Bing Crosby was number one on the charts. It all comes together.
That's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic.
Can't get away
from and to be fair, not a bad song. Christmas. Not terrible.
You can tell it's good because it's a rare Bing Crosby song that people know. You know, the rest of them are, and they're like, and most millennials are like, what the fuck is that? So,
Well, I would say most millennials are like, what's David Bowie's grandfather doing?
Oh, yeah.
Man, do you believe that was one of the last things Bing Crosby saw before he died?
David Bowie?
Yeah.
He thought David Bowie was death. He just comes like, I've lived a long life, done a lot of things, and made a lot of songs. Who's there at the door? Hello, baby, I'm death. I've come to take you to the afterlife. You mean to tell me that we found an impression that Jordan can do worse than this one? That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This short was directed by Arthur Davis, written by Dave Monahan. And what's really funny about this cartoon is that this is the most recently restored cartoon we ever covered on this show, because it literally just got restored thanks to the Looney Tunes Director's Choice Volume 1. If you want to hear more about our opinions on that release, we covered it over on our Patreon. So you can
go there and listen to us. And it's very good, and we want them to make more.
Yes.
It's hard to stop once you start doing Bing, and
Yep. Are there any other notes we should talk about?
Dave Barry is in here as voice actor as well as Mel. I believe he does some of the other guys, because there's a Frank and there's a Bing in this, and I think they're both Dave Barry, because Mel does an early version of another character.
So our short begins with a very, very classic setup here, which is Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra are birds. Wait a minute. Wait. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
When did Sugar Crew come out?
Around, I think the year before. Yeah, but they're different birds, and they actually have principal characters rather than this being a Porky cartoon.
As Frank Sinatra sings, you must remember this, because we gotta milk that Casablanca.
That's the thing. It's yet another mid-40s cartoon that has, as time goes by, in it. Because, again, Warner was riding high on that song.
Yes. Much like how today, Warners will be riding high on I'm Ken.
Probably.
Next year's Oscars. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling and a whole bunch of, like, Ryan Gosling and the and some gigantic gospel choir.
No. It's like the New York, the New York Gay Choir or something.
Yeah, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or something. Yeah. The Gay Men's Chorus. Yes. The New York Gay Men's Chorus.
We hope you like our show. We know you're fucking. No. Now he's gotta go.
There's a lot more of them than in that one.
Now, here's my question, Jordan. Because we see the Sinatra bird after he's singing his song, he takes some vitamins. How did Sinatra not sue Warner Brothers for incessant vitamin usage? Hmm?
Because they didn't have him with a drink.
Ah, yes. Okay.
This probably won't make it in, but there's the old Norm MacDonald Weekend Update joke, because he was talking about the fact that Frank had Alzheimer's late into his life. And it was, you know, it was like, Frank and his estate, basically saying, he's fine. He's not had any big symptoms.
He had a typically festive birthday, singing a duet with a hooker and having sex with Tony Bennett. Probably going to end up in Jersey with a meat hook up my ass, but it was a good joke.
So we're introduced to our Bing Crosby. Who's voiced by an actual Bing Crosby impression and looks like Bing Crosby for once.
Yeah.
And I like how our introduction is that he's holding up a racing form, which I would also argue that's also maybe a bit slanderous. Because wasn't that a part of his thing? Like, he was terrible at racing?
Yes, it was hard when somebody would ride him to get back to the end of the track. No. Betting on the races, you mean?
Yeah,
probably. I don't know. I mean, they didn't teach a lot of Bing Crosby's horse racing habits in school. I must have been sick that day. It was in between World War I and World War II, probably.
Yeah, I just fell asleep during that.
Yeah. World War II is so boring. Yeah.
Okay. Oh my god.
Real snooze of a war.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one or two things that we missed, like the fact that. Because the whole thing with Frank and the vitamins, I like the little bit, because he's so thin and needs the vitamins, so there's a bit where he gives the microphone vitamins as well, and it sturdies up. And also, I like how he moves with the mic. This is what I love about Art Davis cartoons. This unit's so good at fluid movement, well-animated fluid characters, and it really elevates even basic setups like this. Like, the setup of this is basically the Bing Crosby parrot is, you know, trying to compete against the Frank Sinatra canary. And so he ropes in Sylvester. And this is a very proto-Sylvester. The voice isn't there yet at all. It's a lot more like of a...
It's a yuppie-yup sort of Sylvester.
Yeah.
It's a dumbass. It's a stupid Sylvester.
This is not like the Sylvester we'd come to love years later. This is just a more rotund, less likable version of him. And... I will say, because there's this whole thing where Bing propositions Sylvester's like, hey, how about you help me clear this canary out? And I gotta say, the smooth, chill voice of this Bing Bird doesn't exactly fit the quick, clever character and a lot of the movements of it. And we've talked about this before. Sometimes the movements are so quick and frantic that sometimes the dialogue that Mel will do doesn't always work, but in a good way. And here, maybe it's because they use Dave Barry and rather than Mel, it contrasts, and maybe not in the best way.
Yeah, it's a little stiff.
Yeah.
I do like, as Sylvester's about to make the first pounce at the Sinatra bird, we get a very nice Mel scream of, "Hit the road, stupid!"
I like that. You know, he stops midway through a song to yell at someone, almost like the real Frank.
Yeah.
And so here we get into, thankfully, a series of gags. Like, because the whole thing is, it's now Sylvester trying to do whatever he can to get this bird out of there, or to eat this bird or whatever. It's proto-tweeting Sylvester, but it's with Frank Sinatra, and it's not even a full Frank Sinatra. It's very much a zany bird character that does Frank things occasionally. But I do like the gag where he sets up a fake bird made out of, I believe, bread, and then has a line of grease there. And the animation of this is amazing. First of all, I love the POV of Frank seeing the bird and then Sylvester running it right out of the shot afterwards as the POV settles. And I also love the animation of him sliding on the grease right into the sink. That's just really well done.
Yes, I like how he eats the soap, thinks he's got him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that detail.
Yeah, Sylvester eats the soap by accident, and Frank is like, "Oh, I didn't get." No, that's not even the right. It's not even the right voice for it. But yeah, there's an easy gag after this where Sylvester tries leading Frank into this sort of like mechanics garage where he's set up bird seed for him, and I like Frank using the mechanics tool to get out of Sylvester's mouth. That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
Is the magnet gag next?
I think.
Yeah. Because some of these gags are really good, and then some just sort of come and go. The magnet gag I like because of the simplicity of it. Where it's just all these things flying into Sylvester's mouth, which is on the final reveal of this, where it's just like Sylvester pinned against the wall with all these random appliances just stuffed into him or whatever. It's funnier because of this preliminary Sylvester design. He's honestly flabbier and more like sillier looking, and it honestly works.
Yeah, I like just one shot where because he's made magnet bird seed, right? That's why he's able to try to get him. And I do like the one shot of Sylvester like a martini trying to like make the vitamins, trying to be the cat who makes the fake martinis isn't really a strong suit. But,
No, we have a dog for that. And we like him a little. Sylvester we like as well. We like him a lot. What I do like is this vacuum gag where Frank uses Sylvester as the vacuum bag.
This is the best gag in the thing.
It feels like a Sylvester Tweety gag.
Exactly.
Also, I love just because the whole thing is he's filling up with all these things, and then he goes right into the fireplace, and there's this giant music spike, and then he comes running out. I love that.
With all the hot coals in his stomach.
Yeah.
As he
it reminded me of the gag from one of the Tweety and Sylvester cartoons we talked about where he gets like shoved out of like the engine of the ship or something. It's like something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's from Tweety SOS. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. The one with seasick, depressed Sylvester. But yeah, no. So that doesn't work, and the ending of this is Sylvester very injured going over to Bing, and Bing going, "Oh yeah, I've got one other idea, if you're willing to hear me." And Sylvester's like, "I've actually got an idea." We cut back, and it's Sylvester joining in on a duet with Frank. Now he's dressed as Bing and doing the boo-boo-boo-boos because he had just ate Bing. And I like that.
Yeah, it's a very loony ending.
Yes.
Which is something we needed after these other two that were just kind of whatever. It's like, after the other two, like an actual Looney Tune ending.
So Catch as Cats Can is obviously an earlier effort, and it's very much a precursor to something like a Tweety and Sylvester cartoon. maybe the two bird characters weren't great and didn't have much to them other than just these musicians they were doing. And even the Frank one wasn't even fully Frank. The gag work in Fluid Animation made this worth it, especially in the latter half where it's just pure gag and pure Sylvester getting hurt. And a lot of the ground that would be covered a lot better by the Tweety and Sylvester cartoons, I think, it began to be set into place here. And I think that, honestly, the Art Davis crew could have done shorts like that and contributed to the Tweety and Sylvester kind of thing if they had kept the unit running long enough. But the energy of here is good. There's good bones. The bones of this one really work, and it just needed a better characters for Sylvester to chase, and a better Sylvester.
Yeah, the structure is good. I like the structure of this. I like some of how the gags are presented, as it's closer to a proper Looney Tunes short. I also love that Bing Crosby is still the bad guy. I like that.
Yeah. Didn't see on this one, though.
No. Again, I cannot imagine the Rat Pack, like, as soon as the case got thrown out or whatever, they're just around Bing, like, "So you tried to sue a cartoon studio. Yeah, fellas, they were besmirching my name. You tried to sue a cartoon company, Bing.
Wouldn't you?
There's worse tabloids they were shit about us than a fucking cartoon studio.
I didn't want them to besmirch my good name.
You barely have a good name to begin with, Bing. Anyways,
yeah, what's wrong with Bing? Bing's a good name. It comes, slides right off the tongue. Bing. Literally.
I'm giving this short animal rating of 3 out of 5 animals.
Yeah, I'll give it that too. I originally had it higher, but honestly, I couldn't convince myself at the end of the day that it was worth it. 3 out of 5
is totally chill. That's all right. All right, let's see what you guys had to say about these Bing Crosby cartoons. Shut up, boo-boo. I'll take this bucket of lemons and slap your face, silly. All righty, we have our first comment here from Adrian Gudino 44, who says the 1947's Cats Can sort of introduced me to As Time Goes By from Casablanca, amongst other songs, too. Yeah, fair. I mean, again, that's kind of that lucky thing with Warner Brothers, especially with Terrence, was that they were to go, okay, this is very big. We're going to put this song in a lot of stuff. Which, again, at that time, they didn't know Casablanca was still going to have prevalence and still be recognized in 80-plus years. You know, so it's just, oh, you know, hey, you know, it was a fun reference for the time that thankfully has kept on being timely.
Yeah, I mean, and look, it was one of those songs that crossed the pop culture lexicon. It was also a big song itself, in addition to being, you know, a big song from the film. So, like, you know, I'm kind of glad that Warner was proud of it. He's like, yeah, it's a good song. We can, you know, reference it in our cartoons. You know, and I'm glad that, you know, they still use As Time Goes By as part of the Warner insignia in the beginning of all their movies. Even just using it in some of these Warner cartoons. Like, you know, I'm glad they had the pride even then for it. You took the short one. I get the one with more words in it because I'm the one who's reading words. Yes, I'm the writer. I'm the learned one here. No, I'm not that far, but... We both went to college, don't worry. James Irish under the Pemmy and James podcast account. Bing Crosby, Big Gags, Flow Right Over His Head as a kid. These days he has a bit more context for them and the man who inspired those gags. Thinking of Bing's darker side now, his impression was used in Tasmania. No, apparently something happened there. I don't know. Maybe that's a future thing. Although I will say, yeah, that was Taz's dad in Tasmania. That was the one that we were having fun with. It was Maurice Marsh doing his test.
You're doing a Bing Crosby impression, which you gotta think, I mean, early 90s, some of the Rat Pack were still alive. Bing sure as fuck wasn't. Just, you know.
I've been meaning to say this, Mark. Bing wasn't a member of the Rat Pack.
Oh.
You've been saying it all episode, and I figured, you know, because I don't think he was an official member of the Rat Pack. Because the Rat Pack was, you know, Frank, Dean, Sammy, Joey Bishop, some other people. I don't think Bing was in there.
Oh, okay. So this is interesting. So the reason I thought about I thought that was because Bing Crosby is in the movie Robin and the Seven Hoods.
Yeah, that'll do it. And that isn't just the entire Rat Pack. I mean, or else that would mean King Tut from Batman 66 right. is also in the Rat Pack.
Yes, I do too.
Here's the thing, though. Peter Lawford was expelled from the Rat Pack, and Bing Crosby was brought in as kind of a last-minute replacement.
Okay, yeah.
So,
yeah, Lawford was kicked out of the Rat Pack for liking the Beatles. Oh, wait, no, this is Sex Pistols. That's a different thing.
All right. Oh, well. It makes for a funny gag, nonetheless, even if it's historically inaccurate.
But yeah, going on with that, celebrity parody is such a tricky art to get right. James continues, if you're too harsh or crass, you enter the sort of territory that Family Guy courted with their take on Carol Burnett's chairwoman character. If you don't understand the beats of what made the property you're parodying tick, you end up in the same ballpark with a lot of the Simpsons incidentals. Like whenever they try to parody the Muppets or Jim Henson. I get that. You know, they're not always very delicate with some of their parodies. The Looney Crew is generally very good at the sort of parody, probably because they didn't have the same insane churn the television production endured. Just look at how that ground the team behind the Tiny Toons Animation, that having to put out their repetitive derivative drivel that was Hysteria. We haven't gotten to Hysteria yet, but I don't think that's what that was. Feature some of the most superficial parody material that otherwise Brilliant Unit put out. I don't remember it being that bad.
I don't have any connection to Hysteria, so unfortunately I can't comment on that.
Me either.
But, yeah, kind of going back into, you know, like, how to do the proper send-ups of celebrities. I mean, yeah, this is a very tricky thing to get right. I think, especially involving guest stars, I remember an infamous one was that The Simpsons wanted Julie Andrews for the Mary Poppins send-up with Sherry Robbins. And she read the script and she was like, No. No.
She gets chewed up by an engine at the end. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some people who are like, I appreciate the jokes you're doing here. I get you're a big deal, but this is too blue for me. Or this is too raunchy
Got the guy who played Colonel Clake to do it.
And yet, going back to Family Guy, and yet they got Noel Blanc to voice Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny in a very, very mean-spirited Looney Tunes send-up.
Yeah.
Which I still don't like to this day, by the way. I never liked it.
Yeah, neither do I. And it seems like he's sort of punching down Seth. Because, you know, you remember, Seth MacFarlane got his start on, like, Johnny Bravo and Dexter's Lab and shows like that. And now he's punching down at the sort of cartoon tree that he himself fell from. And, again, there's a whole rant we can have about Modern Family Guy and how they sort of take the easy slam sometimes at a lot of these, but yeah, I think that for the most part the Warner crew did have a sort of, like, they didn't push too hard on a lot of these people. Like they tried to, like, this is what they are, and Bing thinking otherwise is more just his ego.
Yeah, that's still bewilders me, because like any other, because no, a good example of that, by the way. Look at, again, referencing the episode, look at Hollywood Steps Out. It's not being against any celebrity. It's just, oh, look, all these movie stars at the time, and look what projects they're in, and look what we can make references to. It's literally it's Hollywood references The Short, pretty much, for the 1940s. And it's done in a way where it's very, you know, it's not highly biting. It's very much like, oh, okay. Yeah, of course Three Stooges would do this. Yeah, of course
Of course James Cagney would do this. Of course Cary Grant kept running after people. Me again. Thank you both for your comments. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Before we get to what we're doing next week, we just want to take this opportunity to thank the people that have subscribed to our Patreon. People such as Tri-Screw, Andrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the guy, not the drink. They have helped us out by pledging anywhere from $1 to $5 on our Patreon. And they get perks like being thanked in the middle of an episode, in addition to their commentaries that they get that we record, as well as early access to episodes and handwritten letters from me, and also playbacks of live streams. So if you want to become a patron just like those four that I thanked in the middle of this episode, you can follow our patron at patreon.com/TNQAF.
Oh, okay, we're getting too fucking stupid. Okay, so... So for next week's episode... boy. All right. Quick. You know, we don't like it when episodes of our show are on holidays that are deemed sad or tragic in any shape or form. But we figured if an episode is going to have to go on, we're also going to cover something incredibly tragic, which is why for next week's episode, we are covering Seven Arts Shorts.
Damn!
Yeah. It's the most tragic thing we could ever think of covering on this program.
This is the one that's going out on 9/11, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Seven Arts Shorts for 9/11. That's just what they would have wanted.
Who's they?
Well, it could work for either the terrorists or the...
I advise you stop while you're ahead. I'll put it that way. Yeah. Stop while you're ahead.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So the shorts we are covering next week are Speedy Goes to Town, because we're going to talk about it. Yeah. Followed by Merlin the Magic Mouse, ending with Bunny and Claude, We Rob Carrot Patches.
We nearly had trouble with this one, and next week I already know we're going to have a lot of trouble with.
Now, what is funny, though, is, you know, between putting this episode together and us actually getting to record it, we learned that Tiny Toon University is going to take the noble task of having Seven Arts creations in the show. So, who knows? Maybe by the time we release the episode, loads of people will be like, hell yeah, I loved Merlin the Magic Mouse in his episode of Tiny Toon University. He was a riot.
Sure.
I fucking doubt it, but...
Sure.
But yeah, that's what we're covering our next week's somber... That's not quite all, folks. That's the end of this week's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkCallum1995.
And you can follow me at Tall Guy Schmidt.
If I'd keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We also have a YouTube channel where we post bits and pieces from episodes, stuff featuring our video feeds. We're on a weekly basis posting stuff from there, so go on there and see what we've come up with recently. We also have a TikTok for some reason. I don't know why. We have a TikTok. Find us there, I guess. Some of the same stuff that's going on YouTube are also going on there. Some of the stuff we post in YouTube Shorts, because that is the big digestible thing now.
Yeah, we're barely gonna touch it. It's just gonna be a video thing. So, you know, if you're on TikTok, you'd be like, oh, cool, we're on there. All right. So, until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and I'm going to spend the next week or so refining my Bing Crosby impression that I will never need again. Good night, and